Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Email us, please, any questions on today's topic or any of our other topics at foremanwolf@wypr.org. All right, Cindy, so we tackled fish, we tackled chicken, we fried some stuff. Let's get to everybody's favorite part of the meal, starches.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're skipping potatoes today.
Right.
Because people, I think, I would say that, you know, that if I was going to rate things that probably people could do pretty well with, potatoes pretty high on the list.
Yes, I think so, too.
They struggle with rice and risotto.
Risotto especially, I have a feeling.
And I think they struggle with pasta and the idea of pasta and sauces. So why don't you tackle some of the first one, because you are a master rice cooker.
I love to make rice. It's one of my favorite things to make. Besides,
there's so many
soups,
different variations.
Sauces, yes. So, and also having a background in Southern cooking, rice is very important to almost every meal on the table in the South.
It's the backbone of your background.
It is. And corn, rice and corn. With rice, if you're going to just make good old Southern rice, it's a simple process of sauteing a small dice of onion in butter. And I will encourage you to use as much butter as you are comfortable with. It is one of those things where butter really shines and really does make the dish better. And that doesn't mean you're putting a pound in. It just means maybe instead of one tablespoon, you're putting four tablespoons of butter in.
It's really toasting that rice.
Yeah. Right. It coats the rice, and the rice does better when it has a little bit more fat interaction. And of course, we know the process of making risotto, you absolutely have to have, it's not a lot of butter, but you have to have fat in the pan in order to make risotto. But getting back to, let's just say we're working with regular Uncle Ben's rice, and saute that onion in butter. And let's say you're making enough rice for four people, I would do one small onion. And once that's become, you have a choice. You can either just wait until that onion is translucent and move forward, or you can caramelize it. And it's sort of caramelized, get a little bit of color to it. It just depends on what your end result is. So let's just say I'm making red rice, which is a very traditional Southern rice, which has tomato product in it. So I'm going to caramelize those onions. So I saute the onion, caramelize them. I add the rice to the pot. I coat it with all of that. I may throw in a small piece of butter at that point and let it melt into the rice. And then I add my liquid, which is going to be chicken stock, 2 fingers horizontally above the level of the rice. That's how high the liquid should be in your pot. So
if the rice is halfway up your pot, 2 fingers higher than that
exactly.
is where you want your liquid to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. So you add your liquid, you stir it really well, and now you bring your pot up to high heat because you want that liquid to come up to a boil. At that point, I add Tabasco to it. I add a little bit of lemon juice to it, salt and pepper. You need your rice to have all of its seasoning from the very, very beginning. You would never, the rice is going to absorb whatever you put into that pot. And then, of course, the tomato product, you could either use palmy tomato, has a very good pureed tomato product, puree, or you could use tomato paste, but I would suggest a pureed tomato. And I'm going to back off on that amount of liquid. So that liquid is going to be probably 70% chicken stock and 30% tomato puree, and then your Tabasco, salt, pepper, and a little bit of lemon juice. And that's red rice. You bring it up to a boil. Once it comes up to a boil, you put the lid, you stir it again, you taste it, make sure it tastes good because you're in the process of making it now, and adjust the seasoning if you need to, put the lid on, and turn the heat down to the lowest you can get it on your stove, and let it kind of have that heat on for maybe 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, and then turn off the heat and put the pot on the back of your stove and just let it sit. And come back to it in about 8-10 minutes and take the lid off, see if it's absorbed that liquid, and get it out of that pot. You're either eating it or you're making it ahead of time. I'm basically telling you how to make it ahead of time so that you can reheat it and have it for dinner. But if you are eating it right away, then you want to make sure it's thoroughly cooked and take that lid off and serve it. You don't want it to sit in that pot. It will become overcooked. So that's a very simple, basic rice dish.
And making risotto then?
Risotto.
It's one of those things that people think I have to go out to have this.
Mm-hmm.
Risotto is just arborio rice.
Right.
Or short grain rice.
Right. And a high starch rice that the end result of the process of making risotto is that you end up with a liquidy, creamy, gorgeous rice dish. Whereas when you make something like the red rice dish that I want, you want flaky individual pieces of rice, fluffy.
So risotto, you're looking for creamy, otherwise you're looking for fluffy.
Right. So with risotto, you have to stir the whole time. And that's the main difference besides the type of rice that you're using. So again, thinking in terms of that rice is going to absorb whatever you put in it, it better have good flavor from the beginning. So I put my stock on, bring it up to a boil. And let's say I'm making saffron risotto with rosemary, and I put lemon juice and Reggiano in that risotto. So I'll have saffron steeped in my stock, and that comes up to a boil. And then I begin to saute the onions in butter. And I'm going to have extra butter here. And I'm going to add my rice after the onions are ready. They're translucent. Add the rice, coat the rice, and then begin to add the stock to the pot. I take the stock up to the level to cover the rice. You want all the grains to be able to absorb liquid. I've seen people make it where they add very little stock. I don't understand that. I mean,
the textures are never that nice.
Exactly. You need just enough water for everything to have the opportunity to absorb. Yeah. You have to stir the whole time. You're on very low heat, and you just keep adding liquid as you need liquid to the pot. So as you see the rice absorbs it and there's not anything on the surface of the rice, then you know it's time to add more liquid.
Yeah, the risotto maker always has two pots.
That's right.
With a ladle going back and forth.
That's right. And that stock that was chicken stock with saffron in it. And I will add lemon juice to the pot as I'm cooking. And I add rosemary to the pot as I'm cooking, fresh rosemary. And I pull that rosemary out at the end. When the rice is al dente, again, if I'm not serving it right away, I'm making it ahead so that I can heat it up later. I take it out of the pot. I put it into a pan, a wide, long pan, so that the rice can cool down as quickly as possible. And I add the Reggiano cheese to it when I put it in the pan. I don't add the Reggiano to it on the heat. It's off the heat. And
you're talking
stir
about
it around.
But that's what you do when you're making it not to finish. You're making it to be ready to to be heated up and finished later.
Right. And then when I go to heat it up later, I just heat it up with the same stock, the saffron chicken stock that I used. And you check it for seasoning.
And it's like a last 5 minutes of essentially adding cheese and butter and getting it hot.
And it's just very, I think that making risotto is time consuming. And that's the only thing. It takes, you know, anywhere from about 20 minutes probably to make a pot of risotto.
If you're doing a start to finish and you're going to serve it, it's probably 25.
Yeah.
25, 26.
Right. So that's risotto. And, you know, to make paella is a different process and very involved. And but with paella, you're adding components to the rice dish. You're making it almost like risotto. You're not adding cheese. You're not necessarily looking for that level of creaminess. With paella, you actually kind of let the rice simmer on the stove. You don't stir it as often. With risotto, you stir it constantly. When you make paella, you just stir it every now and then. And, you know, you're maybe adding clams and shrimp and
it depends how dry or wet you want the final result to be.
Right. So that's a very different process.
You also do a lot usually to season out of the gate for the paella, the rice itself, before you get the stock going.
And then why don't you talk about pasta and making sauce?
Yeah, I think the thing that pasta and sauce as separate thoughts always, it's something that I have a personal problem with the way that we think about it. Because we think sauce is this other thing, and the pasta is about the pasta, you know, for me. And I think when you have pasta in large majority of places in Italy where they do real regional food, it's about it, all the work goes into making the noodles, okay? All the work goes into making these gnocchi. All the work goes into making these tagliatelle, all into the tagliarini, into... That's the work, and getting those noodles to have something else become a part of them, to give a lot of flavor, it takes a lot of patience. I mean, that's taking a dry noodle, boiling it, and putting it on a plate. You know, boiling it, draining it, putting it on a plate, and putting sauce, commercial sauce from a jar that warmed up. I'm sure it can be tasty. It's just not what Italians think of pasta as being, because the point of pasta is the pasta itself. It is the noodles that actually absorb all the flavors. And when I think of the things that people go bananas about when we serve pasta in restaurants, or when I I've done it for people at home. It's always the simplest thing, and that has just crazy flavor. Whether if you, I recall watching with you at the restaurant called Charleston in Palermo. You know, you're watching these guys work with dried pasta. Yeah, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, finishing it just to get all the flavor.
Right, with the clams.
Even though it was dried pasta from the clams.
Yeah, that was.
And, you know, and their broth at the table to finish it. And you know what? The clams tasted good, but the pasta tasted unbelievable.
Yeah, the flavor they got into that pasta. And they did it in the dining room.
But everything else is a garnish.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing, is everything else is just a garnish. And when people ask for more sauce, I'm like, I know we made a mistake, because it's the pasta that should be the highlight.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you're serving gnocchi, which is a potato pasta that's really not that hard to make. You just need the right kind of potatoes. If you're serving that you made fresh, and you boil it in very salty water, literally like seawater, and it comes out, you bring it out when it's warm but not cooked all the way through. You want to finish it with whatever you're serving it with. And maybe it's in the autumn, and you want to serve it with pumpkin and pancetta or something like that. That'd be pretty fun. So you take a little neck pumpkin, you roast it in the oven with spices and plenty of salt, and let it cool after it's come out of the oven for a couple of hours. Scoop out the pumpkin flesh, cook that down on the range for a bit, make a puree, strain that out, and you have a really, you know, they have a great flavor of the pumpkin. You'd need white chicken stock and some of that puree to make a liquid that's almost like a soup.
Mm-hmm.
And when that gnocchi comes out, you have a big, heavy, shallow pan, you know, like a saute pan or a creuset pan or something like that, or a risotto pan. All those things are great for that. And that the gnocchi gets drained and goes into that almost soupy-like stuff, but not a mountain of it, just enough for it to absorb into
it.
The gnocchi a bit. And literally, once that will finish cooking through another minute or two with that liquid, and maybe you have fried sage and crispy pancetta as a garnish on top of that or whatever to give a little accent. But the point is the careful cooking of the pumpkin and the beautiful making of the gnocchi and the absorption of flavor by the pasta. You know, it could be the simplest looking thing. I mean, it ends up with these little orange, you know, sort of, you know, almost olive-shaped
That sounds
pasta, but it's
great.
The point is the sensuality of the pasta, the sensuality of the pasta itself, and the amount of flavor and perfume that it's picked up, and the accents that go against it are the garnishes of the dish. That to me is the point of pasta.
Well, and also when you make traditional macaroni, you're cooking the pasta in the stock in the pan, and that's really something.
Absolutely,
that's some intensely flavored pasta. That's delicious. I love that.
Most of the best filled pastas that I've ever had anywhere, especially in like near Bologna in central Italy or Parma, like Anolini and Brodo is like a holy grail kind of thing. And these are things that look like raviolis that are filled essentially with like a chicken liver mousse or an oxtail mousse.
Gosh, that sounds good.
That you have a great, almost reduced broth, you know, from whatever the animal was that went on the outside that's in the pasta. You use the broth to float those in, warm them in,
sure.
You know, and a little bit of green onion or a little bit of chive or something. And they'll even take the cloche, the top off at the table for that kind of thing.
Good.
Or you bring the pot right to the dinner table. At dinner, and it's like you have the brodo, and you have all kinds of pickled vegetables and whatnot, and the pasta soaked in that broth, amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. A different world from what I think people are used to. So it's
But I mean, pasta should be it's a simple thing, it is a sensual thing, and it's a very like you have your hands in it, and you work to get flavor to show, but through the pasta, it's not like here is the pasta, here is the sauce. You see the flavor of whatever's with it through the pasta,
and it's the same thing as talking about making rice.
Yeah,
I mean, we've just explained by talking about
that's why you get flavor.
Understanding how you make rice, you understand what you're talking about with pasta. It's the same process. It's just not as long. You're not cooking the pasta from start to finish in this broth. You know, although you may be with macaroni or the soup.
So I talked about one personal problem. I'm going to talk about another.
Okay.
I have fear. I have fear of eating green vegetables in people's houses.
Oh, well, yes. Uh-huh. That's because they overcook them, perhaps. Or maybe it's not even intentional, but they don't cook them in a pot that's big enough. Because that's a whole thing with cooking green vegetables. You can't believe how big of a pot and how much water.
How many times in this program we talked about how often it is important to have a big enough or heavy enough vessel to do any kind of culinary operation?
I feel like I repeat myself a lot, but it's essential. And if you're going to cook, I don't care if it's, you know, green beans for four or arrowroot or peas or whatever, broccoli, whatever it is, you need a lot of water and a lot of salt, because the whole point is the moment that pot comes up to a boil, you're going to add cold product to it and it's going to drop the temperature of that boiling water and you need it to recover as fast as possible. That's what keeps the color. That's what keeps the vitamins in. That's what keeps the flavor. So you need to... you know, really do that. That's so essential. So that's the whole thing with cooking a green vegetable. A big pot of water and a lot of salt and a good recovery.
So the great green beans of this summer, if you don't have a big enough pot.
Go buy one.
Yeah, that's, well, I was just sitting here thinking, like,
or
okay, who are the
one.
People who I know that are like serious amateur cooks, and how can I go get them a bigger vessel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where is there a sale on some kind
yeah,
of
right.
those great big you
look
know,
for it the
stove
next time
or creuset pans or
yeah,
something?
You know, any of the cooking stores, go look. And maybe on their sale table, they'll have a big old pot for sale, but on sale. But yeah, it's essential.
Yeah, the two things that I want to give everyone for Christmas are great olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the most recent harvest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that you actually have that. If you pour the olive oil on the plate and you pick up the plate and it doesn't smell like the fruit, it's well spent. You know it's well spent.
Right.
And the color should be brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that big vessel or two that you need to have. Thanks so much for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We'll see you next time.